he was far less skilled than they'd been at that age. He was also behind his peers academically, though Sage suspected he might be like Princess Kara, for whom learning was difficult. Numbers and letters seemed to change their order as she tried to read them. Sage rarely dealt with the prince, and so wasn't able to prove it, though. And if he did have the same problem, he hid it under a haughty attitude. In any case, it sounded like the king wanted him to branch out.
That may only prove this is not dangerous, Claire pointed out, if he's willing to send his own son along.
Oriana rolled her eyes in the way she regularly scolded Rose for doing.
When has Raymond been known to shield his own sons from danger? Robert and Ash have always served on the front lines.
That's not true, Sage couldn't help saying.
Claire looked shocked at her bold correction, and Sage blushed a little. Her Majesty had always encouraged frankness, but even that might have crossed a line.
Robert was moved away from Tazmit last year.
Because he is crown prince, replied the queen. He is of age and becomes more valuable every day, both in what he handles and in his closeness to taking the throne himself. Nicholas may be second in line, but to my husband, he's always a third son.
Oriana shook her head. But he's the only one I have.
Sage still felt the queen was overreacting.
Majesty, if Captain Quinn is indeed going along on this mission, I assure you there is no one who can better protect him.
Maybe so. But that doesn't change that I'm being kept in the dark. Oriana's pale hand closed into a fist. Do you have any idea what it's like to be lied to by the man you love, Sage? To not be trusted to know the truth?
Sage flinched. She'd never told the queen how Alex had lied about who he was, and more, to protect both her and Prince Robert. He'd been honest as soon as it was safe, and he'd promised to never deceive her again. It was different.
Wasn't it? Her eyes drifted to Claire, who had held her while she'd cried, then offered to skin Alex alive, but settled for silently threatening him instead. Claire shook her head ever so slightly, as if to say there was no comparison.
I'm not asking you to do anything illegal or deceptive, Oriana said. I'm only asking you to pay attention, ask questions, and tell me what you learn.
Don't you want to know what's going on, too?
Sage suddenly didn't just want to know. She needed to know.
Chapter 9 Alex looked out over the columns of soldiers. He'd brought only 100 men with him, but as he'd led the morning's exercises, more had trickled in to join them. By the time they'd finished, the ranks had swelled to twice what they'd started with. He glanced up to the observation platform, where a lone man stood watching. Alex knew him by his posture alone. Colonel Traesden wasn't just the Minister of Intelligence and one of the king's closest advisors. He commanded the Norsari. Or rather, he used to. The battalion had been disbanded before Alex was born. Few outside the army had given them a thought in over a dozen years, but the colonel had been a friend of his father's, and Alex had grown up hearing stories about Demora's elite fighting unit. The word Norsari came from Old Aristellan, Norser, which referred to a bird of prey so swift and stealthy, most people had never seen one. Many people believed they were only a myth. If Traesden was watching the new recruits, all of whom had been hand-picked by their commanders, it wasn't hard to guess why. The Norsari were coming back, and Alex was to be a part of it. He was very thorough in cleaning up, trying to fill some of the time before his meeting with the king. When the hour finally came, Alex forced himself to walk to the main hall outside the council chamber with measured paces. Lieutenants Cassock and Gramwell flanked him on both sides,
They reached the double doors to the chamber, and the pair dropped back to enter the room a step behind him, though the doorway was wide enough to accommodate all of them at once. As with Ash, their deference bothered him, but it was his friend's way of showing respect for his rank around others. Another lieutenant paced behind the chairs on one side of the long table. Alex recognized him from morning drills. The man had done very well for all his slighter stature. Alex didn't know his name, so he walked up and extended his hand in introduction. "Captain Alex Quinn." The lieutenant's blue eyes widened in recognition as Alex approached, and he started to salute, then realized he shouldn't in this situation. Instead, he seized Alex's hand like a drowning man.
"Lieutenant Ben Nadira," he stammered. "It's an honor to meet you, sir."
Alex smiled tightly. It felt good when Sage called him a national hero, but facing others who believed it was awkward. After a few seconds, he extracted his hand from Nadira's grip and stepped aside so his friends could introduce themselves. Cass's blonde head towered over Nadira by nearly a foot.
"Lieutenant Kasich. Everyone calls me Cass."
"Lieutenant Lucas Gramwell," said Graham, shaking Nadira's hand. "Luke or Graham is fine."
Two more men wearing silver lieutenant bars entered the room. One looked about the same age as Alex, but the other was older by several years.
"Lieutenant Sorrel Hatfield,"
the younger man said with a nod, looking Alex straight in the eye, as if daring him to comment on the illegitimacy his botanical name declared. Alex didn't rise to the bait, though he made a mental note that this man might feel the need to prove himself more than others. The lieutenant had hair which matched Graham's ruddy brown shade, but otherwise, the two could not be more dissimilar. Hatfield was short and stocky with green eyes, and his skin was more freckled than any Alex had ever seen. The older lieutenant gruffly introduced himself as Zack Tanner, and Alex instantly liked him. With a background as poor as a tanner, he must have had to fight his way into an officer's commission, perhaps, judging from his scarred face, earning it on the battlefield. Tanner and Hatfield had a rapport with each other, a kinship of experience, and there was no question in Alex's mind that they'd both earned their rank. Ironically, his own famous name meant he'd always have to prove his. Once introductions were finished, Alex moved to stand by a chair near the end of the rectangular table, and the others followed his lead. Normally, the table was long enough to seat all 20 members of the King's Council, but several leaves had been removed to size it down for 10, making the room feel even larger. After a minute, the herald announced the King's arrival.
"His Majesty Raymond the Second, King of Demora."
Everyone came to attention as Alex's Uncle Raymond strode in, Colonel Traysden, Ambassador Gramwell, and Ash Carter trailing in his wake. At 44, the king had hair that was thin on top and somewhere between gray and white, but his step was light and his mind sharp. The ambassador behind him was older, with thick hair much redder than his son's and shot with white streaks. When they came to the table, Alex and the others turned to face the king and bowed as the chamber doors were shut. Raymond pulled his own chair out and sat, then waited for everyone else to be seated. Traysden and Ash were on His Majesty's right and left, and at Ash's gesture, Alex took the place next to him. The ambassador sat on the opposite end, barely sharing a glance with his son, while the Minister of Intelligence watched Alex with keen gray eyes set in a weathered face. What little hair he had left was cut so close to his head, it was nearly shaved. Raymond looked to each face with bright hazel eyes, settling on Alex last.
"Welcome," the king said. "Time is short, so I will get right to business. Most of you have been in Tazmit these past months, dealing with the aftermath of the Dimirin Rebellion and their alliance with Kimisara. I'm sorry to say how much the treachery of our own nobility took us by surprise.
Alex's father, General Quinn, had suspected the Demirans of some sort of collusion last year, but winter weather had prevented him from informing the king, which was why the Concordium mission in the spring had included discreet reconnaissance. Had it not been for Sage and her insight on the power the Duke had planned to draw to himself through the marriages of his allies, Alex would never have figured out what was going on. While the uprising had been stopped, the region was still a mess of Demiran loyalists and Khimasar raiders. Whenever the army engaged the enemy, they succeeded, but they were having trouble finding them. The king cleared his throat.
Many years ago, I disbanded the Norsari as a gesture of peace, believing their existence provoked hostility. Now I know their absence is an invitation. War is once again on our doorstep, and we are less prepared than ever to deal with it.
The king nodded to his right.
To that end, I've been consulting with Colonel Traisden on what I'm sure you all suspect.
He paused. One could have heard a feather drop.
I am reinstating the Norsari battalion. Under the recommendations of your superiors, you six are the most qualified men to accomplish this.
A smile Alex couldn't prevent spread across his cheeks until he realized Uncle Raymond had numbered them at six. Other than Traisden, Alex was the most senior officer present. The smile froze and then dropped off his face. No, it was impossible.
We're starting with only a company, the king continued. Once your unit is functional and training protocols have been established and you're experienced enough to lead new recruits more effectively, we will expand to a full battalion.
Alex's mouth was completely dry as his uncle focused on him again. But it was Colonel Traisden who spoke.
Captain Alexander Quinn, you are hereby offered command of Norsari Battalion 1, effective immediately.
Alex slumped against the wall outside the council chamber after Nadira, Tanner, and Hatfield had disappeared around the corner.
Did that just happen? He said.
Kasich rolled his eyes.
No one else was surprised.
I can't even tell Sage.
Alex ran a hand over his face. The Norsari were to be a secret until they were ready.
How am I supposed to keep this from her?
Say you have command of a special assignment,
Gramwell suggested. Command? She'd be so proud. Alex pushed off the wall.
I'll see you two back at the barracks. We've got to get to work.
Not yet, came a voice.
Ash Carter stood in the doorway to the room where Colonel Traisden, Ambassador Gramwell, and the king had remained. The sergeant beckoned with a finger.
It's not over for you, Captain.
Chapter 10. Inside the council chamber, Colonel Traisden unrolled a map and set books on the corners to hold it open before standing straight.
What we are about to tell you, Captain, must not leave this room. Not even your officers may know.
That was disconcerting. Alex didn't know Nadira, Tanner, or Hatfield yet, but if they'd been chosen for this mission, they were already considered loyal and dependable. As for Cass and Graham, Alex trusted them with his life, with Sage's life. He glanced at his uncle, the king, who stood gazing out the window with his hands clasped behind him.
Why not?
Alex couldn't help asking.
For the same reason we kept a lid on our extra purpose during the Concordium escort, said Ash. A man looking for ghosts will see them everywhere.
Like all reconnaissance missions, last year's spying on the Duke was approached with neutrality. Otherwise, everything would have looked like treason. Impartiality was difficult, however. Even now, Alex felt his cheeks grow warm at the thought of how he'd first suspected Sage of being a spy. The evidence was fairly damning at the time, enough that it led him to break into her room and go through her private things. He also was honest enough to admit his personal motivations for uncovering her true identity had been as strong as the tactical reasons.
"What kind of ghosts am I looking for?"
Colonel Trasden gestured to the map detailing the southern boundary with the desert nation of Kasmun.
"Late last September, a ranger detachment came across a place where at least 50 men had camped on the north side of the Kaz River."
He moved his fingers over several charcoal lines.
"Trails of them trickled out from this point and faded. But one, the largest, went as far as the Chauvin Road. Then they turned back south, crossed the river, and went into Kasmun."
The Minister of Intelligence paused and looked at Alex.
"What would you conclude, Captain?"
Kasmun hadn't talked to Demora in generations, but it seemed obvious.
"Our border is being tested," said Alex.
All heads nodded, and Trasden continued.
"Unfortunately, little information could be gathered. The camp was almost 2 weeks old when it was found, meaning it had appeared as soon as the rangers had passed, which also meant they knew the Demoran routine."
Rangers were squads of about 10 soldiers who regularly patrolled Demora's boundaries, which had been considered among the easiest and safest assignments.
"Sir, are you saying they watched us for months, and we never noticed?" "We did notice," answered Trasden. "Rangers have been interacting with Kasmuni for the last couple years, but it always appeared innocent, even friendly."
He nodded to the king.
"His Majesty and I had hoped it meant they wanted to talk."
Uncle Raymond came closer.
"Then, last year, the Demurans rebelled, and the Khemisar joined them," he said. "Our encounters with the Kasmuni didn't seem important until word of this reached us here in November. Both passes were frozen for the winter by then. That's a bad time to realize just how few soldiers are east of the Catrix."
Alex's own orders to report to Tenegal had been written in December, but they'd taken almost 2 months to reach him. Then he'd needed another month to gather the men he wanted. So much time had been lost. The king sat in his chair and folded his hands in his lap.
"The question is, does this have anything to do with what's going on in Tasmet? Are the Kasmuni working with the Khemisar to create more chaos, or have they just been waiting for us to be distracted? Either way, a group that large sneaking that deep into our territory isn't something we can ignore." "It can't be the first or last time they've done it either," added Ash.
Colonel Trasden put a finger on the map where the Kaz River ran southeast.
"This is where you will set up your training camp. From here you can send scouting parties all along the border. Find where the Kasmuni have been crossing, when, and how many."
"Pardon my asking, sir, Your Majesty," said Alex, "but why not put a full army battalion in the area now? Why only a company-sized unit, and a training one at that?"
"Several reasons," said the king, sitting back and ticking off his fingers. "First, I want the Norsari back. I've wanted it for years, but I was restricted by that damn treaty until Khemisara broke the terms. Even after last spring, I had to fight the council, because many said it was only a rebellion, not an invasion, and the Khemisar in Tasmet had technically been invited in by Demoran nobility. It wasn't until Lord Farthingham's son was killed in action last autumn that the tide turned in my favor. Second, you're starting with 250 of the best soldiers in the realm. That makes you worth at least twice that number. Third, the flexibility and speed of a Norsari unit makes them ideal for this kind of reconnaissance.
once they're trained, Alex wanted to say. But plainly, they were expected to operate from day one.
Lastly, Norsari don't need support. They live mostly off the land. You know how many supplies a regular unit requires, and how much attention that attracts. I can't spare the numbers, I can't spare the supplies, and I certainly don't want the attention.
Alex furrowed his brow. Since when was Demora short on resources?
Father, Ash interrupted. I don't think the captain understands how thinly we're stretched. I know the army had to occupy much of Cressera to ensure Demiran's allies there didn't try anything foolish, said Alex.
In the years before his attempted coup, the Duke had bound half of his nobles to the richest families of Cressera through marriages. It was Sage who had realized why.
It's not just that, said Ambassador Gramwell, speaking for the first time. Almost no grain has come from Cressera in over a year. Now the bulk of it goes to the army or travels by the northern road. Once wagons reach Mondali, they're faced with 3 more weeks of a rough journey south, or selling their loads to coastal merchants, and most choose the latter. Between that and the valley and capital absorbing refugees from Tazmit, food stores on this side of the mountains are nearly exhausted. How do you think people would react to news we're expecting a Kazmuni invasion? Which we are not expecting, the king insisted. But people will assume the worst, and I won't have panic. Meanwhile, I want a diplomatic solution, and that starts with a show of strength. Whatever Kazmun's intentions, the Norsari's presence will make them think twice. Your job, Captain, is to find out what those intentions are.
Ambassador Gramwell indicated the Vinova Fortress in the southeast corner of Demora.
I'll be setting up an embassy of sorts here, though it's going to take time to gather what I need. Vinova hasn't been properly manned in years. As a consequence, I must gather a great deal more supplies and personnel.
He turned to address the king.
My actions haven't been noticed yet, sire, and, in retrospect, bringing Lady Claire with me was most fortuitous. The queen has invited her to stay through the summer, so now I have a public reason to have come to the capital.
Alex was glad for Sage's sake. He'd be gone soon, but Claire would be here. Colonel Traesden focused on the map.
How long before you'll be ready to leave, sir? If we want to maintain our level of quiet, I need time, not to mention everything is in shortage.
Traesden grunted.
What about your connections in Rayan? Could they help? I've already contacted them, sir. They'll come through, but it'll be weeks.
Lord Gramwell stroked his short beard.
I also suggest assembling the traveling party somewhere outside Tenegal to attract as little attention as possible.
Cambria can serve your purpose, volunteered Alex. His family home lay less than 2 days south of the capital.
It's off the main road, but still close, and large enough to store what you need and accommodate your retinue.
Lord Gramwell smiled.
Thank you, Captain. I was hoping for just that offer.
Alex made a mental note to warn his mother as the ambassador continued.
I should be on my way before the end of April.
Very well, said Colonel Traesden, though he didn't look pleased. As he studied a calendar. Captain, in approximately 8 weeks, Ambassador Gramwell will pass through your area on his way to Vinova. In that time, you must fully train the Norsari and find out exactly what the Kazmuni are up to.
It would take 2 weeks to get to the border, leaving only 6 for everything else, completely on his own and with more work than he'd ever had before.
When can I tell my officers about our secondary mission?
Alex asked.
Scouting out the Kazmuni situation is your primary mission, Captain, said Traesden.
and the answer is not until you have solid evidence. As far as the men with you will know, this is all for training. Until it isn't.
Until it isn't?
During the Concordium escort reconnaissance, Alex's lieutenants had known everything he did. And they'd been there to check his impulses, even if he didn't always listen. If Alex couldn't tell them anything during this mission, the burden of judgment fell completely on him.
Chapter 11. Sage was on her way to the Royal Library when Alex appeared and caught her around the waist with one arm. He whirled her off her feet, eyes alight, then pulled her to the side and out of sight. His kiss was brief, but it reignited the fire he'd left smoldering in her last night.
"I have my assignment," he whispered.
She couldn't help catching his excitement.
"I can tell it agrees with you. Will you be staying here?"
His smile faltered.
"Well, no."
Sage had known that idea was too good to be true, so she smiled and slipped her arms around him.
"Must be amazing. You look ready to burst."
"You have no idea."
Alex paused as they heard someone passing their secluded spot, and he pulled her deeper into the alcove.
"Let's go somewhere private. Your hair is far too tidy."
He nuzzled her neck.
Spirit above, she wanted to go with him.
"I can't," she whispered. "I have lessons in the library. Claire and the girls will already be there."
"Damn. You'd better go then," he said. "We can talk later, but it'll have to be tonight. Lots of planning to start. See you in the garden? About the 8 o'clock hour? I should have some free time before meeting with Colonel Traisden."
Her disappointment must have shown. Alex tilted her chin up and looked her in the eye.
"I only have a few days, but every spare minute is yours, I promise."
"I know. I'll be there."
He planted one last kiss behind her ear before hurrying off. Sage straightened her dress and patted down her hair before continuing on her way, an ache in her chest. Alex's duties were already taking over his time. She'd known this was coming, knew this was the way it would always be. But that didn't make it any easier. She'd also been so distracted by his kisses and excitement, she'd gotten exactly nothing useful for the Queen. With a sigh, she entered the library. Sunshine poured in from the dome-like cap over the massive two-story room. Several seemingly random window panes were blocked out, and the shelves around the library were set at odd angles and heights. Sage had thought the arrangement peculiar until the Master of Books explained it was so no direct sunlight ever fell on the royal collection. Then he'd shown her and her pupils how much damage sunlight could do to books and documents over time. Even Princess Kara had found it interesting. Claire looked up from the table where she sat with the two princesses, who were already absorbed in their research project. Corinthia, to get it over with, and Rose, because she loved it.
"What's wrong?"
Sage shrugged, trying to act like it didn't matter.
"I just ran into Alex."
Claire nodded sympathetically.
"Luke found me about an hour ago. He said Captain Quinn was given command of a new unit. He and Lieutenant Cassick and a few others are going with him."
Sage frowned. It was silly to be jealous that Claire had learned more than she had.
"Where are they going?"
"He didn't say." Claire stood and put an arm around her waist.
"Don't worry. We can be miserable together."
That both Luke and Alex had given so few details was puzzling. The Queen might be onto something after all.
"Claire, have you ever heard of Colonel Traisden?" "Papa mentioned him the other day, but I don't know anything about him."
It was the only bit of information Sage had.
"Let's ask Sir Francis."
The Master of Books looked up from his cluttered desk and smiled as they approached. Sage had met him in the very first week of her arrival at the palace,
before she knew she'd be offered a job as royal tutor. Thanks to the map he'd drawn for her that day, she'd never gotten lost in the maze of passages.
"Can I be of assistance to my ladies?" he asked, his long white beard bobbing up and down with his words.
"Perhaps," said Sage. "Have you ever heard of Colonel Traesden? I thought I knew all the palace guards, but that name is unfamiliar."
Sir Francis sat back in his chair, his robes flowing down his thin frame like dusty candle wax.
"Colonel Traesden isn't a guard. He's the king's minister of intelligence."
The spymaster.
"Where does his rank come from?" Sage asked.
"He was the last commander of the Norsari battalion."
Sage inhaled sharply, but Claire only looked confused.
"Norsari used to be Demora's best fighters," Sage told her. There was almost no limit to what they could be called upon to do. Fight in traditional battles, go on rescue missions, scout in enemy territory, even commit assassinations and sabotage. Or so Father had told her.
"They were disbanded by my father 24 years ago," said Rose from behind them. "As part of the peace in 486, I wrote an essay on the war last month," she explained to Claire, as she held out several pages of the day's work for Sage's inspection. "I interviewed Papa for the assignment. He said he wished he'd never agreed to it."
Sage glanced over Rose's work. She knew the terms of that treaty well. The Norsari had been broken up, and Kimisara had ceded Tasmet permanently to Demora. If last year's fighting could be considered an attempt by Kimisara to take the region back, then the agreement was nullified. That was what was happening. The Norsari was being reformed. And Alex, sweet spirit, Alex had been given command. No wonder he was excited. Sage glanced up at Rose.
"I'll look this paper over tonight. You can go to lunch. I'll see you in the classroom later."
Kara looked up from her seat hopefully.
"Yes, you can go too," Sage called to her. "Leave your work on the table."
Carinthia was out the door before her sister. Sage turned her sweetest smile on the librarian.
"Sir Francis, do you have any books on the Norsari for Lady Claire?"
"Of course, my dear."
The master of books stood and led the way between shelves, needing no cataloging system to guide him. When the old man passed away, his replacement would have a hell of a time finding anything.
"It can't be just the Norsari, Sage," Claire whispered as they followed. "Why else would Papa be involved? He's a diplomat, not a soldier. Maybe they're anticipating a new treaty when this is over."
"Perhaps." Claire didn't look convinced. Sir Francis stopped at a shelf of military history and ran a bony finger over the spines until he found the one he wanted.
"Here you are, my lady. Birley's account is the most accurate, I would say. His grandfather was among the first Norsari."
"Thank you, sir," said Claire, accepting the book.
The librarian nodded and returned to his desk, his mind already back on his previous task. As he walked, he passed a nearly empty shelf.
"What used to be there, Sir Francis?" Sage asked.
The master of books paused to squint where she pointed.
"Kazmuni History and Trade. Ambassador Gramwell took them last night."
Sage and Claire exchanged glances and followed Sir Francis.
"What are you working on here?"
Sage asked, gesturing at the parchment scattered across his desk.
"Trade documents," he said. "They're all over 200 years old, and many are in Kazmuni, which no one can read anymore. I found them when I was helping the ambassador last night. The previous librarian didn't store them properly, and they're mixed up and falling apart."
He settled back into his rickety chair and rubbed his eyes.
"The ambassador wants them as well, but I must sort them and have a scribe copy them first. My vision isn't what it used to be.
I can do that, Sage said eagerly. Lady Claire can help. She assists Ambassador Gramwell in much of his work already.
Sir Francis smiled up at her, his faded blue eyes watery from the efforts of the last few hours.
I'd be glad to let you, but it will be terribly boring work, and I still need to sort the ones written in Kimisar.
Which Lady Claire and I both speak. We can do it.
Well, bless me. You're more than welcome to it.
He stood again and shuffled to a back room.
Let me get you blank ledgers to copy them into. One for the ambassador and one for our library records, if you don't mind.
Of course not, Sage called to his back, before smiling at Claire. Maybe we'll make one for Her Majesty, too.
Chapter 12 Sage danced up the path to the willow tree. Not only had she and Claire managed to sort the crumbling pages, they'd realized they came in groups of three, different translations of the same document. With the old treaties, Kazmuni words and phrases could be worked out, not well, but it was a huge start. As it now appeared obvious the king expected to open talks with Kazmun, what she and Claire had discovered could be invaluable. She also had an idea Alex was bound to like. Sage swept aside the curtain of willow branches. Alex was right there, and she jumped into his arms and kissed him before he could say anything.
Well, hello to you too, Alex said when she leaned back. Happy to see you don't want to waste what little time we have.
Her grin was almost giddy. How long do you have now? Alex dropped to the soft grass and pulled her down next to him.
Maybe half an hour.
He leaned closer. Alex, wait. She held up a hand to block him. I wanted to talk first.
He ducked around and kissed her neck. It was very distracting.
What about?
When are the Norsari leaving? She asked.
Alex froze for a moment, then sat back, eyes wide.
Who told you about the Norsari?
No one. I just picked up enough details to figure it out.
What kind of details?
He'd drawn his brows down, but he looked more worried than angry.
From whom?
Just... was it that much of a secret? Claire said you had command of a new unit, and soldiers have been arriving for weeks, and they've all been so skilled, and then you mentioned Colonel Traysden. I know who he is.
Alex exhaled, though whether in relief or exasperation, she wasn't sure.
Forget what you know, then. Don't speak of it with anyone.
Of course.
She could keep a secret.
But why is Ambassador Gramwell involved?
Bleeding hell, Sage.
Alex pulled away from her completely.
What else do you know?
Nothing.
Doesn't sound like nothing to me.
She reached for his hand. I promise I haven't been sneaking around. I only know who's involved. I asked some questions. It wasn't hard to draw conclusions.
Don't go around asking any more questions, all right?
Alex said, shaking his head.
People will think I've told you more than I should have. Both of us could get in trouble.
Well, maybe we can get around that, she said, excitement rising again. What if I came with you?
Came with me where?
To the southern border, where you're going to train.
Alex leapt to his feet.
Another piece of information you forgot to mention you had.
Alex, calm down, she said. Norsari have to be trained first, and all the maps of southern Demora are missing from the library. It's obvious.
She'd noticed the maps were missing when she'd gone looking for one herself, to coordinate with the places she and Claire were reading about in the trade agreements. As for her work with the documents themselves, mentioning them didn't seem like a good idea now. Nor did the fact that she'd already told the Queen everything she'd concluded.
Obvious to you, maybe.
He crossed his arms.
The answer is no, absolutely not.
She'd expected hesitance,
but the finality in his voice surprised her. Alex, women travel with the army all the time.
Not this time.
I know you'll be moving fast, but I can keep up, she said.
I know you can. That's not the issue.
Alex didn't move from where he stood looking down at her. Then why not?
Don't you have responsibilities here?
Yes, but it's only for a few weeks.
The Queen would be glad to let her go if Sage could service her eyes.
She sat up on her knees and raised her hands in appeal. And I can help. You'll be living mostly off the land. I'm sure your soldiers are already good at hunting, but I could teach trapping.
No.
And edible plants.
I said no.
And herb medicine. Even fowling, if you want to bring...
Damn it, Sage. No, he yelled.
She shrank back a little. Alex had never raised his voice to her before. Not even the times he was angry with her for snooping around dressed as a maid. Or for letting Claire leave her alone with Duke de Mirren for a few minutes. He hadn't trusted her to know which risks were worth taking. Of course, it had been difficult to know when she'd been left out of so much. Which meant as much as she'd learned about this mission, there was far more she didn't know.
This is my world, Alex said, drawing a long, shaky breath. You don't understand it.
It was Tegan, all over again. I'll never understand your world if you keep me out of it.
There are some things you don't need to understand.
Alex, just hear me out.
Sage.
He knelt in front of her and took her face in his hands.
I'm not discussing this. The answer is no.
He wouldn't listen. He didn't even want to listen. She twisted her head out of his hands, tears rolling unchecked down her cheeks. Alex reached out to wipe them away, but Sage leaned back before he could touch her. He sighed.
This isn't about you, he said softly.
She rubbed her face with her sleeve and refused to look at him. Don't you have a meeting? A long spell of silence stretched out between them.
Do you want me to leave?
He asked. No. Yes. Alex sighed again and stood.
All right.
He paused at the wall of leaves.
Will you be here later?
I doubt it.
I'll check anyway, just in case.
He pushed the willow branches aside, letting in a flood of light from the moon and a few torches in the garden.
I love you, Sage.
Then the light was gone, and so was he. Sage didn't know how long she sat there, trying to decide which she hated more, that Alex had refused to even consider letting her come, or that she'd reacted by pouting like a spoiled Concordium bride. He was lying when he said it wasn't about her. He'd admitted she could keep up. And the way he cut her off when she pointed out everything she could bring to the mission proved he knew all that too. By not allowing her to make her case, he didn't even have to make his, which meant his reasons were weak or inadmissible. If they were weak, then she'd effectively beaten his argument. If they were inadmissible, it meant the mission was far more than anyone suspected. Either way, she was desperate to go along now. But there was no way in if Alex said no. Unless... Sage pushed to her feet and straightened her dress. A few seconds later, she was on the garden path, headed for the private quarters of the royal family. The hour was late, but the queen would still be up, waiting for the king to finish his own endless meetings. Sage knocked on the door, and Orianna herself answered.
Your Majesty, she said, I have a proposal for you.
Chapter 13 Cassock glanced up from oiling his boots as Alex barged through the door and slammed it shut behind him. Without a word, he turned to his bunk and pulled his jacket open. Cass went back to the boot.
It's less than 2 years, Alex. Just be glad you have it to look forward to.
Alex's shoulders tensed his arms angled up to remove the jacket. Cassick paused again and squinted at him.
Did you two fight?
Alex yanked his jacket off. She's so damn stubborn. Cass started to laugh, but smothered it at Alex's sharp glance.
I thought you liked that about her,
his friend said cautiously. Alex didn't respond.
Do you want to talk about it?
Alex tossed the jacket on the bed and turned around.
She wants to come along. Apparently she's got it in her head that she could teach edible plants and trapping and fowling.
Cassick looked thoughtful.
That might not be a bad idea. We're focusing on physical conditioning, but that stuff could be critical. We also have a few recruits who can't read. She could school them. I bet she could teach Kimisar, too.
He furrowed his brow in confusion.
You don't look pleased.
All those things had also occurred to Alex. She had a lot to contribute, and she'd be even happier than she was here, which was why it hurt so badly to tell her no. He'd been counting on Cassick to back him up.
It's a terrible idea.
Cass jumped a little.
Alex, no one will rib you about her, especially once they see how much she can contribute and how little trouble she'll be. And you'll be too busy for much, else.
Alex scowled.
I can't have her around. She's a distraction.
Cassick raised his eyebrows.
I've lived with you for the last 9 months, and I dare say she's a distraction when she's not around.
No. Alex shook his head.
And she won't listen to me. She was all upset, and I had to leave before getting it sorted. I couldn't find her later.
Cass folded up his rag.
In that case, I think I'm done with this for the night.
Alex eyed Cassick as he tucked away his kit.
What are you doing? Morning exercises were always hell when you hadn't heard from her in a while. I expect they'll be even worse tomorrow.
Cass peeled off his trousers and crawled into his bed.
I might as well get as much rest as possible.
Alex clutched the gaping wound in Charlie's throat.
No, this is all my fault.
His little brother choked and gurgled as blood leaked around Alex's fingers, dripping onto the stone floor. There was nothing Alex could do but watch him die.
Such a shame, said a familiar voice. Would you like to try again?
Again? Alex looked up from where he knelt. Duke Demiren held Sage against him, her clothes torn and bloody. The knife he'd used to cut Charlie's throat was now pressed to hers.
Choose, the Duke said.
At his side stood the ratty-eared Captain Geddes, holding up a barely conscious soldier with a dagger to his neck. Cassick. Cass was shaking him by the shoulders.
Alex, wake up!
Alex flung his arms out, nearly smacking Cass in the face, but his friend jumped out of the way in time. They were in the dark, in their barracks room. He sat up, reaching for weapons that weren't there.
What? What's wrong? You were shouting in your sleep. You woke me up.
Alex rubbed a hand over his face and pushed sweaty hair out of his eyes. Sorry. He heard Cass plop back on his bed.
Don't worry about it. Go back to sleep. It's way too early to run, even for you.
Alex slowly lowered himself back down on the cot. But he didn't sleep. Chapter 14 Sage went to the sitting room before lessons, half hoping the queen hadn't had a chance to present her idea to the king. Orianna looked up from her desk with a smile, then picked up the parchment she was writing on and waved it back and forth to dry the ink.
I could have done that for you, Your Majesty, Sage said.
She couldn't remember the queen writing anything since Sage had taken on duties as her secretary, not even personal letters.
Not this time, said Orianna smugly. It's a royal order designating you as Nicholas's accompanying tutor. You couldn't write that yourself.
Sage's mouth dropped open in shock,
His Majesty agreed?
The Queen shrugged.
Well, I didn't specify whom I wanted to send.
You don't think he'll object when he learns?
I think he has weightier matters on his mind. I doubt he'll notice.
Orianna set the parchment down and peered at her.
Don't tell me you're having second thoughts.
Well...
Truthfully, the anger that had driven Sage last night was gone, leaving only sorrow at the thought that Alex didn't want her along. She should have returned to the garden and tried to talk to him again. Going behind his back like this was unforgivable.
What about Rose's and Kara's studies? She said.
Oh, posh.
The Queen set the note down and signed her name with a flourish.
They've advanced so much under you in the past year, they can have a break.
I'll take them to Mondalee for a few weeks. We can visit Lady Gramwell.
I'm impressed by how much Claire has learned under her. The girls could use some of the same lessons.
Claire. Everything was nearly settled, and Sage hadn't said anything to her best friend.
Besides, I thought the plan was also to keep me informed as to what is really going on with this mission.
Orianna glanced back with raised eyebrows.
Yesterday we agreed that keeping me out of everything was both insulting and dangerous, didn't we?
You were particularly passionate about it last night.
Sage nodded.
But now the idea of working actively against Alex made her sick. Why hadn't she thought this through? Why hadn't Alex just listened?
The Queen pursed her lips at Sage's silence. If you're thinking you've changed your mind, I'll wait to send this order. But the girls and Nicholas already know. I told them at breakfast.
She rose and walked to stand in front of Sage, taking her shoulders in her hands.
But I've gotten very used to the idea of having your full and honest account of what is happening. Both Nicholas and Rose are old enough to be promised in marriage. I wasn't concerned before, as there seemed to be no candidates or urgency. But opening talks with Kasman could change that.
Orianna's blue-green eyes were pleading.
Don't let this take me by surprise, Sage.
Girls couldn't be matched until they were 16, but anything without an official matchmaker was legal. Marriages outside the system were typically the very highest and lowest, either royalty or indentured peasantry.
Rose was 13, and Sage often felt more like the princess's older sister than her teacher. If that was what was at stake, there was no way she could abandon her.
You may send the order, Your Majesty, she said, then cringed that she'd just given a queen permission to do something.
Orianna kissed her on the forehead.
I won't forget this, Sage.
Now it was time to face Claire. Her friend was waiting for her in the schoolroom, idly flipping through a history book. Her posture told Sage she was angry, which meant she knew. Sage crossed the room and sat diagonally from her. Claire didn't look up.
I should have said something to you first, Sage said timidly. I'm sorry. You should be. I came down here to be with you, and now you're leaving. I'm sorry, Sage said again. It happened so fast. I didn't think it would really happen anyway.
Claire shoved her book away.
I thought the one good thing about having to wait years to get married was being able to spend time with you. But apparently, you'll choose him over me even now.
That's not true, protested Sage. This is about helping Her Majesty. I'd be going even if Alex wasn't involved.
Claire snorted.
Please, Sage. This is about proving yourself and getting back at him for lying to you last year.
That was too close to yesterday's thoughts for Sage's comfort. She felt her cheeks redden.
The thing is, Claire continued, you're so busy trying to prove yourself to everyone. You don't realize... He's the only one you don't need to prove anything to.
She stood with quiet dignity.
The Queen asked me to serve as her personal secretary in your absence, and there are all those documents to copy. So, if you'll excuse me,
I have work to do. Sage stared at the empty chair. She'd never really had a friend until meeting Claire last year. And even then, it had taken time for Claire to break through the walls Sage had erected around herself. Apparently, keeping a friend was as much work as making one. She put her head on her hands and sighed. Rose and Corinthia arrived on time for lessons and pounced on Sage as soon as they came through the door.
"We heard you're leaving,"
cried Corinthia, tears brimming in her wide hazel eyes. "It's only temporary," Sage said wearily.
"What's wrong?"
said Rose, taking a nearby chair. "Just tired. And actually wondering if I should go after all." Corinthia brightened.
"Please stay. You're the best teacher we've ever had."
"Which is exactly why she should go." Rose frowned at her younger sister.
"Nicholas needs her more than we do right now. I think it's wonderful."
Sage shook her head. "I thought so too, but..." She hesitated. Her arguments with Alex and Claire felt too raw and personal to share. "I just had so many plans for us," she finished.
"Don't be ridiculous," Rose said.
Corinthia pouted from where she stood, but didn't say anything.
"I know what you need," said Rose,
rising to her feet and tugging Sage's hand. Chapter 15. The princesses practically dragged Sage out of the schoolroom and down the passage and several flights of stairs. In one of the workshops on the lower levels, Eleanor Draper listened as Rose explained how Sage would be tutoring the prince while he was in the field with the army. When Rose finished, the seamstress ordered Sage to strip to her undergarments and stand on the small platform in the center of the room before disappearing. Even Corinthia was getting into the spirit as she and Rose helped Sage undress. Rose leaned in to whisper while Kara laid Sage's dress over a chair.
"You must go, Sage, for my sake. I am trapped here at the palace, sewing and dancing and smiling sweetly when I want to scratch someone's face. But you can have an adventure, just like in the storybooks."
Sage looked at her student, realizing for the first time that Rose didn't watch her in the tilting yards and constantly ask about Sage's earlier life out of curiosity or boredom. She envied her. Yet Sage had never seen a definite sign of it until now. She clasped the younger girl's hands and nodded.
"I will," she said, "and when I get back, I'll talk to your parents about expanding your education outside of the schoolroom, if only a little."
Rose's eyes lit up at Sage's promise, and she hugged her as Eleanor came bustling back in with a bolt of cream-colored fabric and a pile of linen. The seamstress set down her burdens and then shook out a bleached linen undertunic. Right before she made to toss it over Sage's head, she paused and frowned. With one finger, she tugged on the shoulder strap of Sage's lace-trimmed breastband.
"I'll have to make you a few of these that are a bit sturdier."
"I'll take notes for you,"
offered Rose, moving to the table with parchment scraps and charcoal pencils.
"Thank you, Your Highness,"
Eleanor said, lifting the shirt over Sage.
"I think 3 should be a good number, and this one fits well, so I can use the measurements in Mistress Fowler's file. Now wait here a minute."
The last comment was directed at Sage as the seamstress walked back to the fabric bolt. With the deftness of her profession, Eleanor laid out the cloth and used a wheeled blade to cut a rough shirt in a matter of minutes. She brought it back to Sage and helped her layer it over the white undershirt. Princess Kara dragged the full-length mirror, a luxury afforded by Eleanor's position as personal seamstress to the royal family, to where Sage could see as Eleanor pinned the sleeves and set the hem to the length she wanted. The long cream-colored tunic flared out from her waist like a skirt, but stopped at her knees. She would still wear breeches or hose underneath.
I envisioned something shorter, said Sage.
Pah!
Eleanor paused her pen.